It's the True Faith Podcast. Alex Hurst here with you. As normal, it's not often that I have a Manchester United fan sat next to me in the studio here in Seaton Delaval. So Steve Armstrong is here from United We Stand, and you might recognise United We Stand from a couple of weeks ago from our 2-0 win at Old Trafford, up to about 70 minutes, when me and the lads were very kindly invited into the hotel football suite where Gary Neville gave a rousing talk with your Manchester United fan. So Steve, welcome along.
And cheers for having me.
Why don't you tell us a bit about United We Stand?
Yep, United We Stand, it's a bit like True Faith. It's one of the sort of old bastions of the fanzine movement that's been going on for many years. We're really proud of. Obviously, we started by Andy Mitten, who's a well-known journalist, but the fanzine is still pretty close to his heart, and it's still his main love in his professional life. So he's been editor of that since he started it in 1989. So he's still involved with it, and we're really proud of the fact that the fanzine stood the test of time. It's still there, it's still alive in print, and it's still going well. And we've still got, despite the ever-changing game and the sort of the way the crowd demographics changing, and a lot of the fanzine crowd who were part of the original. Because if you think about how, you know, the birth of fanzines and where they came about. And I've always pointed up at the Northeast as to, because I always looked at things like Viz as like a real sort of trailblazer for things like that type of humour, but also that type of sticking it up to the establishment type of culture. And you know, it was something that particularly in the North throughout the sort of late 70s and the 80s, where you know, we were brought up in working class conditions, but at the end of the day we had next to nothing, and then you end up with Thatcher, who tried to take next to nothing away from you and then some. So you know, we've always relied really on that kind of, you know, when you're getting downtrodden in terms of your opinions and no one's listening to you, then you know, you fight back. And I think the fanzine cultures, particularly if you're bringing it just, you know, back into football, the fanzine culture was really, really important to that, because of the way the game was panning out at the time. You look at what football and what was happening to football in that sort of mid-80s onwards period. And it wasn't just the government's treatment of us. It was the whole, anybody who had a position of authority, you know, parliament, government, councils, the police, everything about it was just not nice. And the game became an absolute mess. And the way we were treated, herded in like cattle on transport, in away games, and, you know, all of these things, these warning signs that were running up to, you know, the awful events at places like Bradford in 85, what happened in Heysel in 85, and then the ultimate, you know, human tragedy of what happened in Hillsborough. And, you know, us who were going to the games back then, we all knew this sort of stuff was coming. And, you know, fanzines were very, very much somewhere for fans to have voices and opinions in an era when no one was listening to fans. And they weren't listening to fans because they didn't care. They looked down on us. So, you know, I'm really proud that our fanzine was there in the late 80s. It stood the test of time, and it's still going now. So it's what we're on now. It'll be 30 years next year. So it's in its 30th season. I think it's absolutely massive credit to Andy. Produces a fantastic magazine. Andy's status in the journalist world is very strong because he's great at his job, but he's also, you know, he's a man of high integrity, very trustworthy, and people give him content as a result of that. So it's great for him from his professional point of view, but it's also good from a fanzine point of view as well. And, you know, the fact that we can get the manager in there, senior players in there, we've had the CEO in there, you know, whether it be Ferguson and Gill or Woodward and Mourinho, we've had them all in there. So it's gone well on that front, and we're still plodding the streets, still selling it, as I was last night in the game against Juventus. So, you know, 48 years of age and I'm still stuck there selling fanzines. So, but outside of that, very, very proud of the fact that fanzines still exist. And, you know, I said to you the other week about when I heard that True Faith was coming back in print. You know, it's brilliant to hear that. Really, really good to hear, because too many great fanzines, important fanzines, are dropping off the streets. Some of it because of, you know, it's not like the shorter content, but you've got to have people who will be happy to stand there selling the thing. And we're still lucky that, you know, because of the sort of community that we've got at United We Stand, we've still got people who will happily come and earn a few quid for 3 or 4 hours and sell a fanzine. And, you know, it's good that we can still do that. As I said, we had 8 lads out last night. So as long as we've got content, as long as we've got people who'll stand there and sell it, and as long as we've got, really, really top people involved in helping produce it, whether that be Andy from an editorial point of view, the guys that design it and the guys that write for it, then, hopefully we can carry on for many, many years to come. But having a printed fanzine is always going to be important to United We Stand. And yeah, we do the other stuff like the podcast and we do a little bit of online, but the fanzine, the printed mag, will always be centre point of that.
Yeah, I think when I met Andy a couple of years ago when Newcastle played at Cardiff, he was very proud of the fact that Jose Mourinho's first press interview, I believe, was with United We Stand. So even though you obviously are a critical friend of the club must have some sort of respect for you to give the new manager to United We Stand before any other media organisation.
Yeah, you think so. I think a lot of that does stem from Andy's status within the journalist world. But I think when people see that something's been on those streets for getting on for 30 seasons at United, it doesn't take the brain of Britain to work out that that must have something about it, and it must have. And again, I'm pretty sure that when someone said, you know, Jose or whoever, United We Stand, I'm pretty certain that either he or those who advise him will have done a bit of homework and he'll have gone, yeah, I'll be all right with that. I like that. And whereas you think, you know, they can look at it in other ways. That, I'm sure they do it with who they decide to give stories to, who they do in the press. And, you know, it's great for us. And again, you know, you've also got Red News at United, which is older than us. I think Barney is in his 32nd season. It was the first United fanzine and he's still at it. And, you know, he's got a brilliant interview with Gary Neville in there this time round. And it's really, really good. And Gary Neville's a very, very engaging person when you listen to him. But, you know, he's just come across really well in that magazine as well. So I just think when people of that status give any fanzine content like that, I think it's great for the fanzine world, full stop. And, you know, we were lucky enough at United We Stand, we keep getting nominated for fanzine of the year, which is fantastic because it means we can go to the FSF Awards in London and get absolutely smashed. But we were fortunate enough to win it. I think it was in 2012. And it was a great honour and real testament of a lot of hard work, particularly for Andy, that the mag had the credit it deserved in terms of some recognition. But I remember when I was asked to accept it, because Andy wasn't there, he was in the States at the time, and obviously I went up to pick it up, and I was asked about why fanzines mattered, and I just kind of went on this little bit of, I'd had that much to drink, because I didn't think we were going to win it. But so it kind of, what I'd planned to say went out the window and ended up becoming this kind of impassioned speech on behalf of all fanzines, which is, you know, we've got to have fanzines on streets outside football stadiums. It's as simple as that, because it's a soulless walk to a ground when you don't see that. And hearing fanzine sellers outside grounds is just an important part of the match for me. And, you know, football is changing, and it's changing in so, so many ways. Some of it good. And we shouldn't all, you know, I kind of do go to task a little bit with the Against Modern Football Brigade, because some of them are never, not really sure what they're actually against. There's a lot of good changes that have come in football grounds and going to the game, but there's also a lot of things that are still wrong, and that they absolutely need to change. And fanzines, for me, are the forum that have the best vehicle to communicate that. And Andy's always been very, very vocal about, I don't agree with everything that goes in that fanzine, but I agree with somebody's right to express that and to have the fanzine as a vehicle to do that. And I think it's sad that they're not present at every football club, and that they're not around the grounds as much as they used to be. And I hope that there's an opportunity for more clubs to do like what you guys have just done, and get back out on the streets.
I think there will be. One of the reasons that we decided to bring True Faith back, apart from getting a good print deal, which is obviously essential, is how much people engage with the online content, how much people have engaged with this podcast, which we're really grateful for. And it kind of made us realise that Newcastle, with the mag ceasing to print 2015 or something like that, I totally agree with everything you say. It was a real shame that there's nothing out there for, you know, sons, daughters, dad's mums to stick in their back pocket and go to the match, and no one really wants to read the shite in the match day programme, do they? So
yeah,
there is definitely a space out there. And I think the like you mentioned there, you do the videos and you do the podcasts, I'm sure there are thousands of people engage with them, but the fact that it all comes back centrally to a group of 20 or 30 fans. That's all we are. We're just fans. We're not journalists. Mm. From Andy, you know, we're just fans talking about the same kind of things that we talk about in pubs, the same kind of things that we talk about on podcasts. And fanzines are definitely the best way forwards, I think, for fans to get the message across.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think they're a good laugh to be part of as well. And as I said, it's, you know, the thing about fanzines, there's two ways to look at it. Everybody's up against the battle against free content. And as you well know, there's an expectation now because of the generation of audience, you know, the mobile phone, the internet generation who are used to clicking for things and used to not paying for things. And we're up against that. But I still think that the average age of a football fan is getting older and older and older. So I still think the audience is there. And I still think that people will part with reasonable amounts of money for what they would class as valuably good content. So I think as much as there's a lot of free content out there online, most of what I see online is absolutely naff. And I wouldn't even give it the time of day, usually. And again, you even see it with some of the more prestigious newspapers. You know, they'll put content after content after content. And then you actually get one good article that you think, wow, and then you get through the first paragraph and it's all shaded out and it's like click here to you know, I've no problem with that. You know, at the end of the day, I have no problem with somebody ultimately saying, look, if you want our best content, then you've got to sign up and get it. I've no problem with that. But I think ultimately what you've got to do is have the right balance between what do you give away and then what do you expect people to part with. And I think we've been fairly smart with what we've given away for free with things like podcasts and various other things. But the mag, you know, we put a price up this year. It's £3. You know, we held it at £3 at 250 for about 8 seasons. And we just had to put it up. You know, largely because I was sick of not having 50 pences to give out in change. But also, you know, everything else is getting dearer. And, we, at the end of the day, you can't have cost rising and cost rising because at some point, you know, you've got to pass some of that on. But again, I think people don't necessarily, I don't look at cost, I look at have I got value out of it. And I still think for £3 United we stand is a fantastic purchase. And it's great that it's still going well. I see other fanzines up and down the country. I was at Chelsea away on Saturday, and CFC UK, great read. That's only £1. And the guy who runs it, Dave, he's happy for it only to be £1. He says, I don't want it to be glossy or glamorous. It's literally he won't thank me for saying, well, actually he probably will, but he knows what it's like in terms of quality. But the content's top. Yeah. Content's top. And he's saying, I'd rather have it look like that for £1 than charge somebody £3.50-£4 for something that's shiny and glossy, but ultimately it says the same stuff. So we've got a good balance with that now. And as I said, we'll always have the fanzine for as long as we're all involved in it, still at the absolute centre of it. We won't let the online stuff sort of eat away at that. But, you know, there's other ways of keeping those other things alive as well. But, it's something I'm really proud to be a small part of, I have to say. It's a great thing to be involved in.
We may as well talk about football a little bit since you're here. And, your pals who I was at this pre-match meal with last Saturday were saying, it's terrible. It's awful. You know, they were saying, you'll win today. You'll definitely win today. And we were like, bollocks, but we should have won. And I think it's, I think, joking aside, the lads were kind of realistic, though, that they did realise that, you know, it's one thing struggling to finish fourth compared to maybe being bottom of the league. But is there that kind of, is there a growing dissatisfaction, do you think, amongst the support, not just about the manager, but just about the direction of the club at the moment?
100%. It's the full package. I think the manager's one part of many problems. He just happens to be the easiest to be got at. And he's also box office in terms of how he's seen and perceived in media. So it's always, you know, Jim White can't even open a show on Talk Sport without opening it with a poll about Mourinho in some way, shape or form. So he's the easy target of it. But, you know, at every level, it's just wrong. You know, you're looking at absolutely tons of underinvestment by the owners. You know, and we know that they literally put nothing in to get the club, have taken fortunes out, and we've pretty much still got the same level of debt that we were saddled with in the first place. So we know that despite the fact that United have spent fortunes from a transfer point of view, if you actually physically look at what is coming into the club, United should be home and away, absolutely out of sight from where they were in terms of what they could have bought. They should literally have been able to buy every single top player that we've had in the country in the last decade. But again, you look at that level of underinvestment, and people say, well, Jose spent £300 million. Yeah, he has. And he's not spent great either. But when you need to spend three times that, probably, you've underinvested. You know, if someone needs to spend £1 and spends two, they've overinvested. If someone needs to spend £500 million, they spend £300 million, they've underinvested. The amount's almost irrelevant, really, in the scheme of things. So you've got that aspect of it. We've got a CEO who, I'm sure he's a very, very clued up business person, and he seems to be, he was involved in the deal that got the Glazers to the club in the first place. I think he brokered it. I think he was part of that. He's obviously their man. There's no doubt that he has a good commercial sense about him. You only have to look at what the club's value is compared to what it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. So there's, you can certainly say there, if you look at it in the cold light of financial day, yeah, he's done his bit. But it's when he's now starting to have an influence over footballing matters. I mean, this is a guy who didn't think we needed a centre-half, but did think we needed a noodle partner. I mean, behave yourself, stick to what you know and stick to what you're good at, and let people who run football run the football operation. Now, again, if I step out of the emotional side of it as a fan and put my work head on and look on it, and I think, well, to be fair, Jose, you've actually spent a lot of money on, there's a strong case to be put forward that not many of those signings have actually panned out to be all right. He bought and sold Mkhitaryan because that bombed out pretty quickly. Pogba's been all right at best, with the occasional 8/9/10 game in there, but more often than not 6.5 or 7. Romelu Lukaku just seems to have hit rock bottom and has carried on digging. So we're getting, and again, Lindelof, jury's still out. Eric Bailly, jury's very, very much still out. So he's bought a lot of these people to the club. Nemanja Matic last night was appalling. And he just seems to be running on empty. He's brought a lot of these people. United spent £56 million on Fred from Shakhtar Donetsk. No one's seen him since the Wolves game, and that was his best game for United. So, he's very, very culpable in what money he has had. He's not done a great job with it. And he's then kind of getting, as he often does, a little bit bottom-lipped about it. And because of the way Mourinho was when he was on the way up, with various clubs, not many people are going to have too much sympathy with him now that he's kind of on the way down from a career point of view. So I kind of understand the pelters he's getting from outside, but at the same time, he's United's manager, and I quite like the fact that our manager's getting pelters because it gives us the siege mentality opportunity, which we do brilliantly well. Mancunians do that superbly well. And it's also given Mourinho the opportunity to sort of fight back a few times as well. And certainly when you're looking at, the level of, he's doing and saying all the things that do appeal to supporters, but at the same time, he's got to start converting a lot of that now into physical, fact-based performances. And one of the big frustrations on our podcast last night was from the lads was very much, he's been here 3 years now, and none of us are really that sure as to whether we're any further on or any better off. And I think that's the bit that's really rankling with United fans. We just can't see where this is going. And if you can't see where something's going, it's usually because it's going nowhere. And that'd be a massive shame for us, because I still think there's a big part of me that still thinks that it'd be better for United if Mourinho just sorted it out as opposed to left, because then we'll be in another scenario of more transition. God knows whatever else whoever comes in, if it is somebody, would want to correct whatever issues there. Another £1 billion spent on transition, and it's not a particularly great time at the minute. And we're going into United's goal difference is -1 going into November. I mean, for God's sake, and I know I'm sat here chatting to somebody who's probably thinking you think you've got problems, but Manchester United aren't a club that should have a goal difference of -1 going into November. It's as simple as that. This is a club that set out at the start of the season to be competitive for titles and cups, and it's just not panning out. So, it's there's definitely a lot of dissatisfaction around. There's no doubt about it, and more than there's probably been for, probably even more frustratingly. I think people looked at Van Gaal and Moyes and just saw football problems. I think now people are starting to see football and leadership and player attitude problems that just don't sit well. And then you get chucked in there things like, you know, we got beat by Juventus last night, and then Paul Pogba's releasing pictures of himself holding a Juventus bag. You know, I mean, that sort of stuff really gets on our nerves more than anything else it does. You know, we don't want to see that, but we do want to, you know, at least Mourinho is, you know, recognising the support, and he's putting us at the front of it. And we loved what he did on Saturday at Chelsea. You know, he's not wore a club blazer for ages. He wore a club blazer with a badge. He put that on just so he could point at it. You know, I love that. I love that kind of need. I love the fact that he was that riled. He wanted to go and knock somebody's head off. And we've heard a bit more, you know, off the record from what he was like once they'd gone down the tunnel as well, which was fabulously entertaining, if true. So, you know, all of that kind of stuff, you know, he's kind of got the fans back. And Manchester United fans, more often than not, are unbelievably loyal, in the same way that you guys are, but there is, with your club, but there's only so much you can stomach.
Oh, aye, there is. we get to win a game, obviously, going into November. Well, it will be, just before November.
See, the thing is, I'm not just saying this because I'm here, because I would say if I thought otherwise, but I was genuinely impressed with how Newcastle played for a period of time, and I didn't think you deserved what you got, I have to say.
Well, I think, you know, everyone listening knows our thoughts, but we may as well repeat them. The quality of the bench has won out. You know, Mourinho was able to bring on Juan Mata, Alexis Sanchez, and someone else who came on and played well. And we were able to bring on Christian Atsu, who wasn't good enough to get in the Championship side. Mm. Obviously, we're denied a Stonewall penalty because Anthony Taylor from Old Trafford, allegedly, was looking the other way when the free kick was taken, et cetera. But, yeah, it's. I think Newcastle will do very well to stay up this season.
We said on our podcast post match that penalty, I presume, was it the Ashley Young handball, was it? Yeah, which was nailed on. There's no doubt about it. But at 3-0, 3-0's. I think it's the most toxic score that you can get, because at 2-0, I think people are still rattled and annoyed, but people still think if we can just get one. At 3-0, I think that's the tipping point when people go, right, it's done and dusted. And I think when it's sort of 3-0 late, people just get off. But when you're 3-0 down early, it gets I think it's the most toxic scoreline to have in a stadium where people can really vent, because it's too early for people to go home, so they just stay. And it'd have been horrible in that stadium. Absolutely horrible. So we absolutely got away with murder, no doubt about it.
Aye, and let's talk about something positive then. And those of you who've picked up the latest copy of True Faith, thanks very much for doing that. And online subs still available. And if you want it mailed to your door, there'll be a description in the link of this podcast. Please do get involved and support the fanzine. Back cover, Steve, was a good advert from a relatively new company called FansBet, which is your company. Why don't you tell the listenership a little bit about the idea behind FansBet and why it's different to your mainstream established other companies?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I revealed my age a little while back, and my spare time is dedicated to the fanzine and selling it and all the other things coming with it. But you know, I do have bills to pay, so I do have to have a job. For pretty much getting on for 29 years, I've worked for a very, very large global retail organisation, and was at a very senior level within that, a global level. And I kind of got to that point where I'd only ever worked for one business, and an opportunity came my way, not so much from a career point of view, but to get involved in something called FansBet. And that was came to us large because the concept was born actually in Scandinavia. If you go to Scandinavia, you're either a Liverpool or a United fan. It's one or the other. And then your second team is usually somebody from your own country. That's how it tends to work.
There'll be a few Scandinavian listeners now cursing this, but yeah, it's all right. Steve is generally right.
I have met quite a few, actually. I've met quite a few from your club over there, I have to say. So they came to us at United We Stand with this idea, because they'd started off two brands called Red Army Bet and Reds Bet, United Red Army Bet, Reds Bet Liverpool. And the concept was a very, very simple one, which was that normal sportsbook betting, like you would with any other provider, the usual suspects, for those that like a bet, but the different unique selling point for this business was that they promised to share 50% of any net profit made off your account, which sounded really interesting to me. And as a big punter myself, and I love a bet, I enjoy having a bet on you know, whether on most sports, but particularly horse racing, which is an absolute love of mine. It was an interesting idea. So basically, they came to us at United We Stand asking how they could really, what was needed for them to bring this concept to the UK. So we just ended up sort of chatting to them and guiding them and working alongside them over a period of time. And it kind of got to a point then where, you know, the sort of fans bet concept was touted around. So how do we get fans bet as a concept for any club, not just United and Liverpool fans? So the idea of fans bet is a simple one, which is, as I say, it's a online betting platform where you can do your sports betting and any other games that you do that people choose to play, casino, etc., etc. But we simply offer a platform for people to do their sports betting, but with the unique selling point of if you pick and identify a club that you support and then a partner, we make a commitment that any net profit we make off your account, we will share back. So the idea there is an absolutely brilliant one, but as with all brilliant ideas, the bringing it to life in terms of reality is the challenge. So you know, we've had I was then given the opportunity to come on board and lead the fan facing part of this. So, you know, the gaming side, you know, we've got a lot of very, very strong people from the industry who manage the gaming side of the business. All of the things that are important in terms of compliance and technology and all these things, they're in place and operated within the organization. But I'm here to lead the fan facing side of it. So our concept is a simple one. What we want people to do is very, very simply is we're very respectful of people who don't bet, and we're absolutely not for 1 minute suggesting people start betting if they don't. And we're also very, very conscious of our obligations towards responsible gambling and making sure that all of the things that need to be there from a compliance point of view, but also to offer players that sort of security to be able to help themselves and restrict if necessary, are there as well. But ultimately, we also need to be in a position where, you know, if people want to enjoy having a flutter, whether it be the person who likes the 10 a year on the Grand National, or whether it's somebody who does the accumulator every Saturday, or whether it's, you know, the people who genuinely do like to play on a regular basis, we think our platform gives everybody the opportunity to do something that is really, really unique, and that's to say, if I win, fantastic, but if I don't, then potentially any revenue that we're going to make off me is going to come potentially back to something that really, really matters to me. So I lead the fan partnership side of it, and I'm now doing that from a full-time point of view. I loved the idea that much that I saw it as exciting enough to leave behind a great career with a fantastic company that I'll always love, but now I'm very, very much excited about the potential of what we can achieve here, because I think ultimately having a bet is a fundamental part for many people of a sporting event. And again, I'm not for 1 second suggesting that there aren't some issues around gambling at the minute, and we know that there are some reputational challenges that the industry's working really hard to deal with, and the regulations that are in place. You know, there's a lot of really strong regulations out there now that are absolutely the right thing to do for the industry. But from our point of view, we are very, very committed to the sharing profit part and giving back. And our plan is a very, very simple one. When people sign up and open an account with us, once they've gone through the sign-up procedure and obviously proven through the Know Your Customer thing that we're very, very committed to, that people, once up and running and have an active account, can play. And then we have the opportunity for you to say, as I said, I'm a Newcastle United fan and I'd like to nominate True Faith as a beneficiary of my account. And once at the end of each quarter, everybody who say does that, we work out whatever the net profit is of that. And if it's an amount, we'll cut it in half and we'll carry on running our business with what's left. And then we're in a position to sort of share back with our fan partners. So really excited about the opportunity that we've got there. We think it's very, very unique within the industry. I think our biggest selling point on that front is, yes, we are an online betting company, but our strap line about being about fans and by fans and for fans. This isn't just some kind of corporate statement. It actually really is true, because everybody within our business is first and foremost a fan of football or a fan of sport. And as I said, you've heard my sort of background from a professional point of view, but you also have heard my football fan background as well. You know, I've been going to the game since 1978. I've probably missed two or three European away games since the mid-80s. I tend to get to 99% of home and away games each season, by hook or by crook. I'm heavily involved with the fanzine. And, you know, throughout our business, we've got people who certainly are fundamentally part of going to the match every day. So we think we've got an exciting opportunity here, because, yes, we can run a betting platform, as can anybody, but we think that we've got a really good opportunity with our insights into fan world, fan culture, and an understanding of what being a football fan is all about, or a sports fan, because our view is if you can support it and have a bet on it, this applies to football, rugby. You know, we've got an ice hockey team in Sweden who are partnered up with us, a fan group for them. You know, we think that this concept has got lots of opportunity across so many different functions. So unbelievably exciting opportunity. It's a really unique selling point, and I'm really committed to working hard, as is the whole team, on the fan partner side, to bringing that to life. And because we want to make a difference to so many things within the fan world, but also in the communities that matter most to them, because, you know, the sense of community, I think, is a really, really important part of this, and that is something I'm really, really committed to helping bring alive.
Yeah, and you know, the discussions we've had, it's not just Manchester United, it's not just Liverpool and now Newcastle United with True Faith, it's Peterborough United, it's and like you said, the ice hockey team in Sweden, it really is like a community thing, so it could be any football club, any, you know, fan organization or activity as you continue to grow as a company. So it's like across the sport, really, just at the top end.
I think when you look at any the football fan surveys, whether it's the stuff done by Supporters Direct or Scotland Supporters Direct or FSF, you see some real common trends in the feedback that they get from people who take their surveys. And a lot of them are saying things like, you know, a lot of people are sort of saying, I don't get to the game as often as I can. And you can probably pinpoint changes in family circumstances, financials, probably even access to grounds and games nowadays. But there's usually a reason for that. That always comes up. There's a lot of fans who often say that they don't feel that their club nowadays reflects their community as much as it used to do. So those two things always come out. But one thing that is absolutely evident when you also look in these surveys is that fans feel that clubs have to be part of their community. And do more for their local community. And also that clubs should have voices of fans in their corridors of power, whether that be physically in the boardroom in terms of ownership or strong representation at fans forums, communication sessions or whatever. So when you look at these sort of channels that keep saying the sort of same thing, clubs have got to listen to that. But here we are still in the same scenario as we appear to be every year, where those things keep coming back. And I think because of that, I think people will always have the connection with the team and the club as a whole, because for most people, it's something you commit to for your whole life. And that's it. It's probably the one thing that you do stay 100% as a constant to, you know, throughout your whole life. I mean, you know, you have family, but people fall out with family. You have relationships, but they often break down. But the one relationship that does seem to be the constant from start to finish is your relationship with your club. So I think as much as people's attitude towards the club is changing, I think still people want the association with that. And what we think we've got the opportunity to be able to do here is there's some serious fan causes out there, like ownership, like there are fan groups out there, really active fan groups who want to get a grip of their club. You know, and I was up at Scotland Supporters Direct Summit quite recently, and the supporter movement in Scotland, there's a lot of fan-owned clubs up there, and it's fantastic to see what they're doing and what they're achieving. But there are some clubs out there who have got an absolute battle on their hands with who owns their club. And, you know, one very, very close to home here where we're having this conversation, it's very, very well documented about what's going on there. But, you know, potentially our platform could enable a cause such as that. But our platform also allows that the sort of smaller supporter branches to get involved as well. So, you know, the 20 or 30 people who are going on a coach, you might have a flutter on a Saturday. Again, revenue from us potentially could help fund away travel. We've had that with Punjabi Wolves group, a group of Punjabi Wolves fans who go home and away. You know, they've been the benefactors of us, and that they've put that towards away day travel, which has been great. And there's a couple of videos of those guys on our blog site, which is a good look if you want to have a look on there. But then there are bigger causes, as I've said, like ownership, and some of the guys and trusts and groups that we're involved with or having conversations with have got that as a key strategy. But again, there's other things, some of the more sort of community-based things as well. And there's a lot of stuff going on now that aren't necessarily club-facing causes, but they're community-facing causes. And I think a lot of fans who are saying things like, if my club isn't going to do as much for its community as perhaps it should do, well, we're going to do our own thing. And I think when you're looking at, you know, fans supporting food banks, is pretty much, you know, I know it's big here in Newcastle, it's absolutely massive as a joint initiative in Liverpool, in Merseyside with Liverpool and Everton's. The Manchester United Supporters Trust have a food bank drop off on a match day. So things like that are becoming sizable. And then you look at things like Sheffield United, their independent supporters association are partnered with ourselves, as are Peterborough United, and we've shared revenue with Peterborough recently, and they've got this ticket scheme called Smile Tickets, and it's basically whenever they've had spare cash, they give spare money to buy tickets to take people from underprivileged backgrounds to the match. And it's a fantastic story that, but they've now been able to buy, doesn't sound a lot, but they've now been able to buy five season tickets from us, or four or five season tickets from us. And they were telling us quite recently they took some guys who were homeless to the match a few weeks ago, which was, you know, driving into the city, you know, taking people away from the streets and taking them to the game. They met the club and they went on the pitch, and, you know, being able to enable something like that it's a really inspiring thing to be part of, because the sense of, you know, ownership of clubs, that where people feel that the club's not being run the right way, or they feel that the club's being taken away, these are serious issues. Our scheme allows people to be able to potentially put revenue towards that through people nominating that, but our scheme also is a broad church. It enables us to do some of the really, really nice community-based things as well, and, you know, that's the truly exciting part of it, because ultimately we're not just wanting to share revenue as well. We want to partner with fan partners. We want to help them with their goals and their objectives and help them bring some of those things to life as well. So, you know, the opportunity to do that is great. And again, as I said, whether it's something that's of a very, very serious nature, such as club ownership, or whether it's something that's a real heart of the community thing, like a food bank initiative or smile ticket schemes, or whether it's physical, logistical match day stuff, like maybe subsidising ticket costs, maybe it is subsidising coach travel, whatever. We've got so much opportunity to do a lot of good things there. And the thing that I'm really quite passionate about as well there is we're not just sharing revenue, we're hoping to basically empower fans groups to be able to have a revenue stream through something that a lot of their members would do anyway, to have a revenue stream that they can then make decisions as to what to do with it. So they're also getting the empowerment to do that and feel like they're making the difference to, whether it be club ownership, to these community-based projects, or to functional match day experiences as well, because all of those things, you know, they've all got massive importance to all of us. So being able to help enable some of those things is very, very exciting.
Sounds it, and it's a kind of real breath of fresh air to an industry which has been the same big players for a long time, and everyone listening will know that you can't switch on the TV these days without gambling companies shouting things back at you and all this kind of stuff. Well, this sounds to me like something totally different, something a lot more ethical, a lot more grounded, like you say, in communities and in just football in general. Like this sounds like something for football and for football fans, compared to just making money for some big company, which, you know, good luck to them. But yeah, I'm definitely excited by it. I'm definitely going to be a fans bet customer, and you know, the True Faith will always back something like this, because, as you say, you know, we had the fans food bank last week, which you people listening raised £1,000 for by yourselves, just by paying money to ask people to donate a kind of honesty box. We raised £2,000 on the night. Fans bet just sounds like the perfect thing to come in, partner with that, and even improve it across the country. You know, you talked about Liverpool there, Manchester, and I'm sure it's starting to happen. It happens a lot in Scotland as well. So if you do want to have a gamble like I do, and if you do want to put Newcastle 4-1 pulled them on Saturday and lose you £10 in advance because it's never going to happen. I'd much rather that £5 of that money was going back into something like the food bank supporting this podcast, the supporters trust you've talked about. So yeah, I'm all for it, Steve. It sounds like a great idea.
No, and again, it's really nice to sort of hear that. But as I said, it's a business that's what, something like a year old. We've made terrific progress. We've got a lot to learn. We've got a lot of progress to make, but we're very, very confident in our internal ability to do that, both from a industry point of view, but also we can absolutely think and act and understand what's important to football fans, because we absolutely are football fans. And too many people chuck that sort of thing away, almost as a bit of a front. It's absolutely not, you know, the case. And you know, everybody saw, you know, your current owner doing his standing in the stands with a pint and his Newcastle top on. You know, people see straight through gimmicks like that, because deep down they know that it's just a front for what's going on. But you know, we're absolutely dedicated and committed to fan causes, whether it be, you know, and there's a couple of other things with this as well. It's not just the sort of football thing. Horse racing welfare in the UK, which is a fantastic organization that helps people within the racing industry. Again, there are people out there who don't necessarily follow a team. They follow a sport, and we think we've got big opportunities within there. So if somebody likes a horse racing bet, again, you've got the opportunity to nominate Racing Welfare, Irish Injured Jockeys. You know, there's a number of other great, great causes out there. And, you know, in the space of a year, I think we're up to, we've got something like, at the time of today, I think we're about 107, 108 fan partners with us, which is great. And it's great to have that many people at such an early stage, putting their trust in us and their faith in us to do what we say we're going to do. And, you know, as I said, our job is to now make sure that we work really, really hard at creating an organisation that's profitable, that gives us that opportunity, as we're now starting to do with the giving back stories. And as I said, I think we've given back to something about 24, 25 of those fan partners in the last sort of 3 or 4 months. So the dream that we all had is now starting to become a reality, and that's hugely exciting, because ultimately having the dream that you want to do something is ultimately, you know, you're in the hands of other people and as well as yourselves in terms of whether you realize that. You know, we're really, really proud that in a short space of time, you know, we've got supporter branches, fanzines, trusts that we've been able to sort of share some revenue back with because of their loyalty to us. And as I said, are about fans for fans. Logo rings true, as does our loyalty wins logo as well, because ultimately we recognise that your loyalty to your football club is something that should always, always be rewarded. And I think there's an argument to say that a lot of us as fans feel that sometimes that doesn't often materialise, does it? So, you know, we're looking forward to the future. We'll work really hard to make all of these dreams of our own internally come to life, but being part of helping a lot of these fans groups, whether it be big trusts, fanzines, online media and podcasts, supporters groups and local branches, fulfill their goals and objectives and dreams as well. It's hugely exciting. So hopefully we'll be able to bring all of those to life and then some.
Spot on, Steve. And Thanks for coming to talk to us and the True Faith listeners. You know, the thousands of you who listen every week, who we're very grateful for you to do so. Couldn't recommend this more from a personal perspective, and we'll probably be talking about it and mention it on future podcasts, or we definitely will be. Steve, I can't let you go without asking you for some predictions. Can you give me the finishing positions of both Manchester United and Newcastle United this season?
Oh dear. I think United are at best the sixth best team in the league. So at best, I think sixth for United. I think the problem we've already got is we've not really played what you class as anyone massive yet. Well, we have now. We've obviously got the Chelsea game out of the way, but prior to that, Tottenham at home was probably the biggest game, and I would still have expected to have won that, or at worst got a draw. When you start getting beat by Brighton and West Ham, you're not leaving yourself a lot of wriggle room there. For when you go up against Liverpool, who are better than United, City, who are better than everybody, and then even Arsenal, Arsenal won 10 on the spin or something daft like that. So, you know, there's teams out there that are just light years ahead of United, and that's just the reality of it, I'm afraid. So I think United are staring at a 10-game losing season this season, and that more often than not if you finish sixth with that, you've got away with it a little bit. So I think we'll probably finish sixth at best, which I think means Europa League, which would do me right because I love the Europa League. Europa League is a great tournament. You get to go to some mad places. You also get an extra European away trip that you don't get in the Champions League in early February. And the thing I really enjoyed as a horse racing lover is just the guarantee of playing Sunday. So I got to watch all the top racing for the first time ever during the Europa League. You've got that sort of... I found it really easy to plan my life knowing that it was going to be Thursday, Sunday for the rest of the season. I quite like that. So as perverted as it might sound, I would more than happily get dumped out of the Champions League in third place this season, go straight into the Europa League and then finish sixth. So that'd do me. As for yourselves, I know the too good to go down or too big to go down thing gets always banded around. But as you well know, you know, because it seems to happen to you pretty much every other season, you know, you do go down. I have always had high regard for Newcastle as a place. I find it just astounding that a club that can put 52,000 people through the turnstiles, and it being this really passionate city from a footballing point of view, I just find it astounding. It keeps finding itself where it is. I think it's even more astounding when you look at the fact that you've got one of the game's truly great managers who clearly loves Newcastle. And he's proven that by sticking with you to bring you back up. I still think that because of him, I can't, even though everything's pointing towards that you're going down in style, I just can't see Rafa Benitez not being able to sort that out. And I saw enough in 50 to 60 minutes at Old Trafford to see that there is some good football in that Newcastle team. So I'm going to say, if you ask me now, and I think, is it something like a couple of draws and eight defeats or something? Yeah, I mean, it's not looking great, is it? I do think that you look at the bottom four or five do seem to be getting cut adrift pretty quickly. So I think you're just now in this, how do we get X number of points? But I do think that manager and some of those players are good enough to get to sort of 36, 37 points, which should probably keep somebody up. So I think you'll stay up by the skin of your teeth. But again, I used the term before about wriggle room. You know, we've not left ourselves any, and I think you're getting to that point now where you're not leaving yourselves any either. I think it's one of them, though, where the one thing that I think Newcastle have over any of the other teams that are down there is you've still got the opportunity to make this an evil place to come and play football as an away team and as an away fan. You've still got that opportunity to do that. And I think if the crowd really, really get behind, that should probably just about drag you out of it. So I'm going to say that now, but if we get to this point where, you know, you go another month or another five or six games where that situation doesn't appear to have shown any sign of it turning, you know, it's going to be difficult for you. That. So good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for your time, Steve. It's been a pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks for having us.